This is all theater. This is all just political theater.
Political theater. Political theater.
Pure political
theater.
Theater.
Political theater.
The nefarious,
significant, and protracted
political theater for political theater's sake.
I yield back.
From Washington, this is Political Theater. Roll Call's review of the spectacle of politics on Capitol Hill and across the country. I'm Jason Dick.
Covering the White House is one of the most high-profile beats in politics. Covering the Trump, then the Biden White House, and starting during a pandemic and an election year, makes it even more high-profile. Roll Call's chief correspondent Niels Lesniewski has been at the helm for a little over 4 years, and he's here to share his experiences as he prepares for a new assignment here in the Roll Call newsroom. Highlights, the lowlights, and the weird lights. Niels, welcome back to Political Theater.
It's great to be back in Political Theater, and it's great to be with you in the same room.
Yes, this is something new. I mean, we seem to be, I know people are, the COVID is still around, it's still a serious issue, but we feel, you know, we're experimenting, especially when we're in the same building, to try the podcast in the same room. So here we are in the CQ Roll Call newsroom's glass cage of emotion, the Udane room with all the headlines and surrounding, and it's kind of cool. It'll be weird because sometimes viewers, you will see me probably looking at the camera, and then sometimes you'll see me looking at Niels and vice versa. But Niels is literally just a couple of feet away. So, yes, new things. speaking of new, Niels, you'll be starting a new assignment here. Roll Call, as I alluded to in the intro, you're keeping a political portfolio. You'll be doing some new stuff that we can talk about at a later date, but retaining coverage of some enterprise stuff, particularly with a look towards the campaign and the Senate. But in the meantime, the White House job is, as I mentioned, this is a big deal in journalism and politics. It's also kind of a burnout role too. So it's actually good to get people cycled in and out before it just burns you to a crisp. And if anything was going to burn you to a crisp, it would have been the last few years, because when we were going through your time, when we were talking about it the other day and talking about starting this podcast, I had forgotten that the day that we're recording this, March 13th, 2024, is 4 years to the date when an event happened that we signaled just how much momentum and how serious the pandemic was getting, which is when the NBA canceled its games. And I remember I was in the gallery of Capitol Hill, and it was like, pandemic had been around for a while, but that was when it signaled like, oh, wow, they're canceling sports events and forfeiting millions of dollars. So it was a big deal. And that was right around the time, you know, you had started a little bit before that. But your intro, it was like, you know, some of these college students or people who started in the workforce during the pandemic. I mean, you've only known a White House within the context of here. Let's talk about that a little bit.
That's right. So when I started at the White House full time, I had been over there, you know, over the years from time to time, but I really started there full time in January of 2020. And so obviously it was only 2 months later that we had moved from thinking we were covering, I was going to basically be the lead reporter covering the Trump reelection campaign and what that meant for our audience on Capitol Hill, and how much the president at the time was going to go out into the country and support Republican incumbents and challengers in House and Senate races. And, you know, on the other side, we had the wide open Democratic primary. And the question was, okay, so who's going to emerge from this? And we thought we would have a normal looking primary season. And so partly why I went over to the White House when I did was because it was a political year White House operation. And then, we all became public health reporters. I spent more time dealing once, campaign events basically ended. I spent more time in the White House and in this rotation of reporters. I think people, you know, remember the point where there were about 8 people in the press seats in the normally packed White House press briefing room for these briefings with the likes of Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Deborah Birx and Vice President Mike Pence, who was leading what they were calling the coronavirus task force in those early days. So I was part of all of that, and I had, you know, no expectation when I went to the White House that I was going to be spending basically all of my time working with our colleagues who produced the CQ Health newsletter rather than the At the Races newsletter.
And also, just some of the logistics involved there, too, because in those early months of the pandemic, we needed to keep you separate from the people at the Capitol. So we made a decision that, you know, you'll be at the White House and you're going to be in that kind of bubble, right, where you're getting tested every time you go into the building. You know, you're having to keep your distance from the president. And you know, as you said, there was the press briefing room was normally packed. I mean, you had like all the space in between people. And we, you know, we weren't in the office in those early months at all, but we did have people up at the Capitol. And we were just like, we need to keep people kind of walled off as long as we can to try to fight the spread of this. And then it just, yeah, that just became your life. for events like, when Trump got COVID and when he announced Amy Coney Barrett as his Supreme Court nominee, and then how that led to a big outbreak in COVID at that time.
And the utterly bizarre Republican National Convention at the White House. Remember, they had the outdoor ceremony there that was not like anything anyone ever anticipated seeing. And the other thing that I remember very specifically, which this was not the time that President Trump actually got COVID, but in the way the press pool works, which I know we want to talk about a little bit, where there was this limited number, especially in those days, there was a limited number of reporters and journalists, videographers, that audio, the like, that was allowed even when events were outside. There was a period of time where everything, every departure on Marine One, everything was restricted. And I will never forget, one of the primary duties of the pool is to report back and share with our colleagues. It's a function we participate in and also pay into, frankly. But providing our colleagues from other outlets with the sort of blow-by-blow of what the president is doing and what the president is saying. And there was one day that he said, and I believe this is the exact quote, that he tested very positively toward the negative.
It's a way with words there.
And so myself and people who were in the pool from other outlets, I remember there was a reporter from Bloomberg who was... You know, you have to get that right, because if you mess up, the president has tested positive, and you put an alert on the Bloomberg terminal,
you can move markets.
And so that literally is what we were trying to avoid, was putting out news that was wrong, that would have global
repercussions. It would have been easier if he would have used some of the other words he likes to deploy, like tremendous. So he tested tremendously negative, for instance, or something like that, along those lines. Instead of positively to the negative. Like, what does that even mean? it wasn't all that. I mean, the first year or so, you did have that just incredible amount of tension, stress, because we didn't know what was going on. And then, you know, some of these events you just mentioned, you know, whether it was like outbreaks in the White House or whatever. But things did smooth out a little bit. Not that the last few years have been a cakewalk or whatever, but like things did sort of settle into a normal flow of business. And talk about, before we get to some of the highlights, lowlights, and weird lights, as I put it earlier, just talk about like what's a normal sort of White House day in a White House reporter? I mean, you mentioned the pool, but like, you know, there is a rhythm to the place that a lot of people don't get to see.
Yes.
And don't get to experience.
Yes, and rhythm was certainly a returned, particularly once President Biden took office. And a lot of the sort of day-to-day operations went back to looking like what they had looked like for obvious reasons during the Obama administration, because
a lot of the same people.
It's all the same people. The staff is largely the same, or there are people who were in junior roles the last time around. We're in senior roles the second.
Jake Sullivan, for instance.
Yes. And then they were all sort of a lot of familiar faces from Capitol Hill, too, because, you know, Joe Biden was a senator for 36 years. I'm not sure he's ever told anybody that.
As we're often reminded.
but it got back to a normal cadence. And what you normally would see, and every day is a little different, but if they're in town, you got back to the regular flow of probably not a lot of public-facing activity in the morning. That's when the daily briefing happens for the president, where he gets his intelligence updates and the like. And there are generally lots of things going on behind the scenes. I am not an adherent of the people who say there's nothing on the president's schedule, therefore he's not doing anything. Of course, the president is busy at all hours. But when what would normally happen is there would be some combination of a press briefing and some kind of public-facing event. In those earlier Biden period, the event was often in this giant auditorium they had set up across the street because there were still some COVID concerns going on. And so it was often he would be meeting virtually himself on Zoom or with a few people in the room in a big auditorium in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building. But the press briefing is sort of the linchpin of the day for the press corps. And it's often where, you know, this dance that goes on between the White House and the reporters, and especially, you know, frankly, with the television networks. I'm sure everyone has watched one of these briefings before. And you always have that question of, will all of the television reporters ask the same question because they're going to have a segment on the nightly news or the evening news or world news, and whether or not they need to have the same exchange with Jen Psaki or whether they need to have the same exchange with Karine Jean-Pierre, and then how far back in the room will it actually get? And that's one of the challenges that I always have and have always had, is the question of how do you best have an opportunity to ask something when you are about halfway back in the room. And that's always been our challenge.
That may be like 10, 12 questions deep. And, you know, maybe Corinne is like looking to wrap things up at that point too, because it may have gotten testy, you know, as sometimes it does, depending on what the question is and the answer. Yeah, and so that happens, you know, usually, I don't know, around lunchtime to 3, usually doesn't get any later than that.
Yes. I mean, one of the things we often run into is schedules have to be rather flexible. Our office where we're sitting right now is a few blocks from the White House. So I have the advantage of being able to run back and forth. And frequently, you know, there have been a number of times where I will have left the building and started to walk from the 1200 block of Pennsylvania Avenue to the 1600 block of Pennsylvania Avenue. When a long delay has been announced, I will literally turn around and walk back to where I started from, and oftentimes be greeted by our colleague and host of the CQ Budget podcast, David Lerman, who asks,
"Our tracker, Isaac, is over there. I spot a tracker right now."
So our colleague, budget tracker, who will invariably say, "I guess the briefing is delayed," when I walk back in after having left 15 minutes earlier.
As a veteran hand would know. Yes. By the way, good time to plug subscribing to the CQ Budget podcast, where you can hear our tracker, Dude Lermith, and the rest of the budget team talk about the budget and appropriations. but back to our regular scheduled program there. So we are, I mean, at CQ Roll Call, we are part of the daily press pool. That usually entails you know, doing the, which you explained, the pool duty, you know, like, it's usually works out to like once a month, you know, sometimes a little bit, depending if there are more public events on the schedule, it might be more frequent than that. But that typically comes down to once a month or so. And then, you know, you or other people who we have as part of the White House Correspondents Association, or even just at part of our newsroom, sometimes get roped into other supplemental coverage too. Say if the second gentleman needs coverage, or the first lady, or the vice president, and they don't have anybody on hand, sometimes they'll ask for, you know, a hand. And I know that you've done some of those too.
Yes, I've been both in D.C. and also in one of the more interesting things is when you go out of town, or when you either go out of town with the vice president, or you happen to be out of town, as is a thing that has happened to me. There have been at least I've been to fundraisers in Manhattan when I happened to be in New Jersey, as someone, I was more local than the folks in DC to where the fundraiser was going on. And so, but it's important that the press corps has eyes and ears on these events, and that we do in fact scramble when necessary. You know, there's a separate out of town traveling pool that travels everywhere with the president. But for the vice president and the first lady and the second gentleman, it's a much more ad hoc system that is reliant on members of the press, White House Correspondents Association, to volunteer. And it's an important function, and sometimes it costs money. But that's something that, you know, it's something that the public deserves, and our colleagues, frankly, in the media business at large, all pull our weight on that. And it's important that keeps happening.
Let's talk. So we are not part of the typical, the president's typical travel pool, you know, which can mean as far away as, you know, Australia or Camp David. Or even Wellington, where his primary residence is. But even so, there have been a couple of times that in particular one where they desperately needed some coverage, and you were able to help out and get pool, you know, coverage for in town, out of town. It was this weird situation where you ended up taking it was like a sequel to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Wellington, talk about that a little bit, because I think it's just, you know, amusing in a political nerd sort of way.
Yes. So I got a phone call fairly late from a member of the White House Correspondents Association board who was desperately looking for someone who could get to the White House first thing the next morning to board a bus and take a bus to Dover Air Base in Delaware. And of course, so for those of you who are unfamiliar with the geography, that meant an early morning trip across the Bay Bridge, past Annapolis and out into Delaware, in order to meet Air Force One, or the plane that would become Air Force One once the president got aboard, because the president was going to basically leave the pool behind that was with him at Rehoboth Beach. So he had been at his beach house, and the logistics were such. This has now become a regular occurrence. If you read White House pool reports, you'll see that this weird maneuvering in Wilmington and in Rehoboth has become a more routine event. But I think this was the first time that it had happened, and so we were all sort of flying by the seat of our pants. And so I got on a bus, went out to Dover, and then took a very, very brief flight on what they call the smaller Air Force One, which is basically a converted 737, I believe, or thereabouts, all the way from Dover Air Base in Delaware to Joint Base Andrews in Maryland.
a 5-minute ride. You spend a lot more time taxiing on the runway than you do in the air, because it's quite literally maybe 50 miles as the crow flies, you know, or as the Air Force One flies, maybe. No, probably not even that far.
Probably not.
So you ended up, even though you're in town pool, you were in town out of town at that point. Who wouldn't take a bus trip across Delaware, across the Delmarva Peninsula, early in the morning? It's every political reporter's dream. Let's talk about some of your best experiences and memories at the White House, because it's a lot of work and it's high pressure, and you know, there's always tension and competition with peers, but there's also some moments of fun and grace. And what are some of them? What's like, you know, one of the more positive memories you're going to take from that?
So the events with celebrities and things like the Easter egg roll are always fun to cover. You never quite know who you're going to meet at the White House. One of my favorite stories, which I think we'll probably put in the show notes for this episode, was the time that Jason, of course, as listeners of this podcast, I'm sure know, is a pretty big baseball fan. And so when baseball was returning from the pandemic and restarting games, while the first game was going on at Nationals Park, and Dr. Fauci, I believe it was throwing out the first pitch.
Chris, that was the plan, at least, that he would throw the first pitch. Yes, go ahead.
Meanwhile, at the White House, Donald Trump had a special guest who could actually throw a baseball. In fact, his cut fastball was the best cut fastball in the history of baseball. Mariano Rivera showed up at the White House.
Hall of Famer, New York Yankee, greatest relief pitcher ever to play the game.
And so we had this bizarre experience of a bunch of little leaguers basically out on the lawn with the president and playing catch with Mariano Rivera. And it was just one of those sort of otherworldly sort of experiences that you get at the White House from time to time, being like, am I really here? Is all of this really happening? Visits with foreign leaders, the NATO Secretary General, various heads of state and heads of government, those sorts of things are all important to cover, and they're all interesting. And you do pinch yourself sometimes being like, am I actually standing in this room with this particular crowd of people? But the ones that are just the weird ones are the ones that are the best, because you're like, why is this happening right now?
And for the record about Fauci, when I put the air quotes in the throw, from his throw, it was not clear whether he was trying to throw to home base to Sean Doolittle, who I believe was kept behind the plate for the ceremonial first pitch, or first base. It was unclear exactly what his intent was from where the ball ended up. But one of the great ceremonial first pitches of all time, or at least memorable. What will you not miss about being a White House correspondent, Niels? You could be honest now, you know, sure. Although you don't need to burn any bridges, but what are some of those things that you're glad you did them, but just glad you also don't have to do them?
Well, you know, I think that one of the worst sort of recurring issues at the White House is, and I'm not the first person to say this, nor will I be the last person to say this, is the scoops that are not really scoops. You know, so sometimes, and lots of times, reporters do great reporting and they find out things that they're not supposed to find out. Things that the White House or the administration does not want revealed to the public. But sometimes someone has an exclusive on an announcement. This particularly happens with personnel announcements that then appear 7 minutes later in everyone's inbox. And that is one of those things that I guess I'll just be candid and say that's frustrated me for years. I've never really made a secret of the fact that part of the business frustrates me. So, you know, it's nothing against the people who actually have, you know, do the work and find things out that they shouldn't find. But when something appears as an exclusive in one outlet or another at like 4:53 a.m. and then at 5 a.m. everyone has seen it, that's always a bit of a challenge. The other thing, which is more sort of operationally about the White House, that is not true of a lot of other government buildings, but we can't get food there. We have a vending machine and we have a soda machine, and the WHCA does a very good job of making sure that they get those vending machines repaired when something goes wrong with them. But unlike, say, on Capitol Hill, where you are eating in the same cafeterias with lawmakers and staffers and everyone is interacting while they're waiting in line for taco salad on Tuesdays in the basement of the Senate, you have to leave campus. If you're a reporter and you're looking for food, you basically have to leave campus. And if you're in the pool, you have to prepare ahead of time and have enough stuff in the refrigerator, especially if it looks like a day where you might be just running straight through lunch.
Yeah. It is this weird thing that, I mean, I guess I can understand that there are obviously security concerns about like letting everybody into the White House canteen, but it does seem like odd that if you're stuck there, you know, say you were late, you know, or whatever, and you're kind of stuck there and you're in the pool and you need to be there. Like if you're okay eating like the big Texas cinnamon roll or whatever is in the vending machine, fine if you have an iron stomach, but if you need like a meal, it's hard because there's also a lot of downtime, you know, where you can't really leave, but you also can't go, you know, like it is an odd thing. So, all right. So before we wrap up, like what's the weirdest experience you've had in the White House in your time as a White House correspondent?
The weirdest thing probably was the trips to the, and this is not necessarily the weirdest thing because it's kind of commonplace, but I always found it weird, so I'll go there, was that when President Trump was president, and he would go to his golf course in suburban Virginia, out near Ashford, there was one time where I thought we were going to crash on the way back because the traffic didn't stop where the Dulles Toll Road meets the Beltway. And so we go with a motorcade full scale into traffic into traffic on 495. Or yes, that's 495 on that side. And so that's always the thing where you sometimes, and you see this from time to time, where there will be some kind of traffic incident involving the motorcade. But the motorcade itself sometimes can be the sort of most daunting or weirdest experience, especially when you're just sort of in normal traffic and they haven't stopped everything.
Right. And you're also in like kind of limited, you know, kind of visibility from your own vantage point. Because I mean, I know that things have changed since the last time that I was in the White House pool covering, you know, but like in a motorcade, but sometimes you're in a windowless van and it's a little unnerving. So if like there's, you know, kind of herky jerky traffic, it could be, you know, like you think like I should be the safest person in the world right now, surrounded by like, you know, federal agents and people, you know, there to keep the president safe. And yet like, the beltway traffic or some things that Washington DC traffic can fell the mightiest.
Well, Niels, thank you so much. It's been a blast, you know, being your editor, cause those first couple of years I was your, editor for the White House, stint. And, you know, we'd obviously previously worked for years, when you were primarily covering the Senate. You've been in the cable and able hands of Herb Jackson, our campaign politics editor for the last couple of years. And I look forward to continuing in your new assignment, which we'll talk at a, with you at a different time when that happens. But thank you for all your hard work in the White House. And, you know, you will obviously not be a stranger to this podcast at any point. But it's always been great to have your insights because, like, that's our thing, right? We're just a little off the side, a little off center in the way that we do things and cover things. And I think that's worked out well for us all. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you for listening out there and watching. New thing, Political Theater Podcast guest and host in the same room for the first time in several years. Thank you for supporting us. Tell your friends, subscribe, do all those things that make podcasting worth it for us. And we'll see you next time. Thanks.